Tim, have the lead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have presentation of the updated investment policy statement. I think most trustees will remember we had an introductory session to this back in August 10th, where we kind of showed you the first draft of the investment policy statement, talked about how it would work with the investment policy statement being a briefer document, policy focused, that anything implementation related was either moved to internal procedures or board investment resolutions, and these would kind of nest together as supporting documents. Took some feedback from the trustees from August 10th. Ed has incorporated those into the investment policy statement. I'm going to let Ed talk about what was changed in the investment policy statement and kind of where everything rests, but the recommendation from staff is we've got full buy-in now from CICERA staff, from legal counsel, from the consultants, and this is the board's forum to discuss the draft before you.
Okay, great. So the couple of the key updates is that, following on Tim's point about the involvement of staff and legal counsel, it's been very collaborative, which has been really great. And so a lot of the edits and redlined versions and everything being circulated have gone through everybody's thought process, and I think it's been a very thoughtful process. So I was very glad to see that. A couple of the highlights from the last time that you saw this on August 10th was that per Rusty's comments, we had some additional language added to Section 2 under authority. And that was to address some specific legal references there. We also changed the investment directives to investment resolutions. So what we were referring to before as the directives, we're now going to be referring to as resolutions going forward. And we envision these as being resolutions from the board providing investment directive that will be investment direction that will be held in that separate document. Also, an important change is that the procedures that we talked a lot about, the operating procedures and things that we had embedded in the original and said, let's pull those out and have them separate so that we have a separate document just of the procedures. They are incorporated, or they are referenced, but they are not incorporated into this policy statement. And that's an important delineation because that means that the procedures then are internal and staff-driven, led, and approved, so that all of the boxes that need to be checked and ticked and tied and compliance checks on all of that are done internally with staff, not requiring board approval of those. So you know that they're there. You can see and view them and get comments and, you know, whatever, vet them, but they don't require the board-level approval. And so that was an important change. There's also some additional language added to the portfolio monitoring section, which is at the end, section 8, which also includes on-site due diligence. That was part of the feedback we got in August. So we had on-site due diligence as part of the hiring process for new managers and strategies. Now we added that same language into the portfolio monitoring and oversight, so it's part of the ongoing process. And then there's various other cleanup of language and such. So if we showed you a redlined version, you'd see a lot of minor changes to it, but generally I think it's cleanup more than substantive. So we think what we have before you today in terms of the investment policy statement is essentially a signature-ready document. I'm happy to have the discussion about anything that you're seeing or have questions about, but over the course of the past months, getting to that first draft, which was a pretty laborious process, and then getting through this second round of edits to incorporate everything everyone said, we think we now have something that's ready for you to say, yep, we're good to go with this, and we can get that in place. And then we have the coordination with this document along with the resolutions, which Tim will be talking about in a moment, along with the procedures, which you also have in the materials. Let me pause there and see if there are any questions on the investment policy statement itself.
And I wanted to add on a comment on the procedures. And since this IPS is a departure from the past IPS and you know, with the different elements in it, we wanted to make sure that the board had a good understanding of the procedures that we had in mind. These, as we incorporate changes into our portfolio, these may shift somewhat. We're not anticipating these coming back to the board, or if there are additional ones going forward that need to be added. But we thought that with this being a brand new IPS, it was important that you had kind of initial pass on the procedures on what we have in mind, so that you do see that we do have you know, our ducks in the row, and you know, we do have a plan for implementing once this is approved.
I was going to say, one, I thought it was nicely written. One of the experiences I've had I'm at the bottom of two, so on page two, where we have several referenced code sections, and nothing that says something along the lines of "and such other sections that may now or in the future be applicable." So that anytime, invariably, that means that somebody is preparing to write a new code section. It's not this one, and so this isn't in compliance with the new one that comes along. Just giving yourself some leeway. With all the attorneys in the room, I'm just dealing with applicable, the way I've actually had to operate these things. And if you're too precise without some future flexibility, then it's out of compliance, and now you've got to amend it.
So you're looking at under roles and responsibilities here?
I'm looking at under C, Cal Constitution, Article 16, Section 17, B, C, and D, and then Cal Government Code Section, stop. In other words, presumably the applicable sections.
We would recommend keeping that language as is and not providing for future flexibility. We don't really anticipate changes to the Constitution or to these rural statutes in the near future. If that were to happen, we would want to come back and amend this policy because that would be big.
Hey, you noticed I left my out that with all the attorneys in the room. This was strictly.
We can leave.
Hey. Thank you. Rusty.
I was just going to suggest as a best practice maybe to review the IPS once a year. And then when you do, of course, incorporate any new language that may be relevant to it. But otherwise, I would assume this is a living document. It's not set in stone.
Correct.
So when we do have our annual review, if there are changes, then we have that opportunity to update it.
I think that is a good practice, just annually to put it on the agenda.
Sure. Yeah. Under A, Rules and Responsibilities of the Board of Retirement, the first paragraph, the last line, the areas of the investment program the board may not delegate include, and at the very bottom, the last two on the bottom, can you explain a little bit more about those two, engaging board consultants and service providers, and then monitoring the investment program? Can you just expound a little bit on that for me?
So those are basically non-delegable duties that the board is required to fulfill. You can't hire anyone else to do those things for you. So no matter what, you are still responsible for engaging board consultants and their service providers. So when you look at hiring or firing your board consultant or specialty consultants or your actuaries or legal counsel, those are all board duties that you can't take away. So what we're saying there is that you retain that responsibility no matter what. The last bullet point is similar, monitoring the investment program. The investment program, you can delegate all sorts of duties about how it's implemented and operationally how it works so that you can stay at the higher level and policy level. But you guys
do the monitoring on it.
We provide you with the monitoring. So we provide you with the reports and the discussion and facilitate the Q&A and make sure we're following up on that. But it's something that you retain as your...
Still our responsibility.
Still our, that's right.
Still our responsibility. All right, thank you.
Great. Any further questions?
Yeah, hang on. I've got a... on page five, zone one... Mm-hmm. The last part of it says, when such rebalancing activities occur, the CIO shall notify the board at the next regular scheduled meeting. And at first I thought to myself, why after the fact? You've done it. But in fact, we have been doing it that way.
Yes.
So I'm okay with it now. But when I read it, I was like, wait a minute. And now I got it. Okay. So, okay. But it did pop up. No, just a comment.
That I think is a really good comment because we have the tie then between this policy and the investment resolution. The investment resolution gives definition to what those zones are so that you have comfort that, okay, working within this zone, we get notified after the fact. Working within zone two, which is everything outside of zone one, we have to know up front.
Okay.
Jerry.
Just one other little nit. I'm sorry, I should have picked this up earlier. On page 7, seems to me there ends up being enough debate these days sometimes about what the meaning of English words might be. So on item small I dot, down at the last one where it says uncompetitive pricing vis-a-vis available alternatives, might we consider saying regarding or involving or concerning or something? Or
yeah.
I don't know what vis-a-vis is.
As compared
sounds
to
the, very elitist to me, but I'm impressed.
Do you prefer as compared to?
Or something like that, or involving or whatever it might
what
be.
What page are you on, Jerry?
7.
Page 7.
That's probably what a Yale guy as opposed to a Harvard guy would do.
I don't know.
compared to.
You need to get out a little more, Jerry.
Just kidding.
I think it was the accent.
Very French.
I had a question on page 7, halfway down, determining existing managers. It says, although the board's explicit approval is not required, it shall maintain. What does that really mean? Well, it's not required, so we can do it anyway. That's kind of.
So there would have to be a notification to. This is talking about terminating existing managers. So it's kind of laying out the rationale and the factors we would look at when deciding whether a manager no longer has a strategic place within our portfolio. Now, it's delegating the recommendation and the process to the internal investment staff, specifically to the CIO here, to terminate that manager. Now, importantly, the termination does not happen without board notification. So while the board, let's say there was a manager and for a personnel departure reason, I said, this is no longer somebody we should be working with. So I have a notification to the board. Now the board does not have to affirmatively vote to agree, but they can say, we disagree with you, do not terminate this manager. So it can be, in the normal course of action, it's an information item to the board, this manager will be terminated, post notification. But the board doesn't have to take a vote on it.
As we did at our last meeting.
Yeah.
Silence is acceptance.
Right? Yeah.
But we can say no.
Okay.
Okay. Any further
Hang on.
Questions, comments?
Does the IPS address any emergency situations where Sam needs to make an immediate decision? And in which case, the board may want to hear and agree with or veto over? Did I miss that? Okay, well, okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Somebody pointed it out to me.
Yeah, the emergency termination section.
Yeah. I've got one more. On page 9, asset allocation. In the old system, every 3 years we used to go through the asset allocation and make readjustments.
Right.
This is requiring, we're doing an annual review.
Right.
And we can make those same adjustments with that annual review that we did with every 3 years?
Yes. Because the size of the liquidity pool is changing every year based upon the actuarial projections, we need, you know, the dollars are increasing for now. They're increasing every year, and that's going to be a changing percentage of our total funds. We're going to need to adjust
yes.
our allocations.
Yes.
We can have a conversation about capital market assumptions in the same conversation there. So our views, or actually Veris's views on capital market assumptions would be kind of embedded in that conversation, and then we'd be updating based upon the actuarial projections, the size of the liquidity pool. And if you wanted to make an adjustment elsewhere in the portfolio, you can have that conversation at that point in time.
Okay.
Yeah, what is Directive 610? I couldn't figure that out. What does that mean?
The investment resolution. Okay. Investment resolutions are anything the board wants to basically communicate from an implementation standpoint. Now, in the past, the investment policy statement included policy and limits on portfolios and that sort of, and asset allocation. We've said anything that involves implementation moves to investment resolution. And the rationale there is, while this is a living document, we want this to be more of a foundational document. And if the board wants to express iterations or implementation preferences, we're going to do that via investment resolutions. The 610 would be that asset allocation. So every year we're going to refresh that because we're going to say the liquidity pool, you know, a year has passed and now a new you know, fourth year of benefit payments is coming in. We need to have the actuarial projections on that. That's got a dollar of sales value associated with it. We need to take a look at the dollars in the program and back into what percentage of the overall plan that is. And then you, the board, will express a new directive that says, this is our asset allocation target for, you know, practically for a year at a time, but you will express it and say, until revised, this is our asset allocation target. When you do that, you will also provide zones, and there'll be a recommendation. 28% in the liquidity program, plus or minus this. 70% in the growth program, plus or minus this, and you'll provide those. So that will all reside in this investment resolution 610, which is the asset allocation.
And I'm assuming that you all will provide specific recommendations regarding what those sideboards are, and we're not going to pull these numbers out of thin air, obviously. It's going to be based on a recommendation.
And one comment on there. In your document, it says Investment Directive 610, but it's actually Investment Resolution 610.
The 610 numbering system actually went away, so this didn't get caught in the final iteration here. It just should just be Investment Resolution Asset Allocation.
I've got another. I'm sorry, a lot. Of, you got to bring me up to speed on a lot of stuff because it's. And you know, I was a social science major in college. I wasn't a business major. Okay, on page 11, diversifying sub portfolio. Is this what are the assets in that? In that portfolio, you gave us examples in the liquid sub portfolio and the growth sub portfolio of what the assets would be, but I couldn't pick it up in that paragraph. Can you explain that to me a little better?
What's up with modeling?
Yeah, it's actually quite a bit of it is to be determined because this is a newer way of thinking about how we're constructing the portfolio. So when we talk about the implementation plan in a moment later on the agenda today. You'll see how we are mapping a couple strategies into this risk diversifying portfolio and recognizing the need to hire more. And when we talk about hiring more, we're going to be looking for strategies that can offset the volatility in the growth portfolio. So they're going to have some characteristics that we actually need to define better and do searches and find strategies that meet them well. Some ideas that come to mind along those lines are things like potentially certain hedge fund strategies that can be risk diversifying, risk parity, commodities kind of strategies, things of that nature can be risk diversifying against the growth portfolio.
I believe in the asset allocation that we're working off here, it was modeled as U.S. Treasuries and then select hedge funds.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Broad hedge funds.
Yeah. We have a broad hedge fund. In terms of bigger picture, those are the behaviors. This one is more behaviorally defined than asset class defined because we want this to be an offset to the growth. Growth allocation is going to be the big dominant factor here. This is meant to be that slightly hedging element to it. So we're going to be kind of taking a look at what's available and say, does it meet the thresholds of having a low correlation to the growth assets and being liquid? Those are kind of the key hallmarks there.
When we focus on those, I'm going to really need to understand why this particular thing and thank you.
And as Ed said, that's a to be determined. There's going to be board education, manager searches associated with that.
Okay. Believe it or not, that's all.
Okay, any further questions? If not, I think